I'll just be 2 seconds. I'll start the diet tomorrow. If you don't sleep, Santa won't come. Open wide, this won't hurt a bit. At Brexit, we'll get the NHS 350 million quid a week. Iraq definitely has weapons of mass destruction. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. We live in a world of words. We live in a world of lies. Barely a week goes by without some sort of claim in politics, media, or business about lies, cover-ups, half-truths. Every week there are new revelations about the lies and corruptions behind national elections, campaign promises with empty statements that are solely designed to win your vote with no intention of actually keeping them. In fact, we've now reached a point where you're considered naive if you believe anything in the public square. I wonder if there's a deeper problem too, because lying is so subtle and so deceptive, so common, that we kind of mask it with clever sounding words. So I didn't lie to my GP about how many units of alcohol I have a week. I was just economical with the truth. I didn't fix the statistics to prove my point. I just massaged them a little bit to make it clearer for you. The product I sold to the customer, it wasn't defective. No. It just had some unique elements that were added in a custom manner. I didn't lie about doing my homework. I exercised my gifts in creative reasoning. And no, I did not get ChatGPT to write this sermon. I just utilised the technology at my disposal to maximise the efficiency of my working patterns and ensure the viability of divine worship. And when you got pulled over doing 95 on Church Walk earlier, you are well practiced at pretending. You honestly never knew it was 20. You are shocked the police are taking such an innocent mistake so seriously. That lying comes so naturally, we get really, really blooming good at it. And if that's true in the real world, how much more is that true online? Kind of the explosion of digital technology at the internet has opened up a whole new territory of lies. The problem has always been there. We've just got a new way of expressing it. And since what happens online isn't real, well, we're allowed to be a whole lot more dishonest than we are in reality. Right? That making up who we are on social media with filters, AI-enhanced photos and more is just considered normal. Now, I can't tell you their name because it's rude, though Mark will afterwards. There are a couple of guys on Instagram who love pointing out how much people exaggerate when it comes to their jobs. So I'm going to read you some job descriptions from LinkedIn, and I want you to tell me what the actual job is. Okay? Here's the job description. They said, I combine my experience in the automotive and logistics sectors to implement end-to-end delivery solutions for a US-based food conglomerate. Who can tell me what they do? They are a driver for Uber Eats. What about this one? I managed a portfolio of liquid assets for a diverse range of clients. That's it. They work behind a bar at uni. Has anyone ever worked in Tesco's or Sainsbury's or someone like that? It's very tempting to write in your CV, I worked on the checkouts at Tesco. But why do that when what you can actually write is, I manage daily financial transactions for a FTSE 100 company. I've called this section the promise of lies. And just glance with me, if you've got a Bible, back to our passage in Exodus, because it's striking, isn't it? This issue is such a big one, it makes the top 10 things God has to command us about. It's not something just for primitive people living in a primitive time in those little tents. But it's something for every human being across every age and stage, across every culture and country. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Verse 16, the ninth command, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. The particular type of lying that God seems to have in view here is giving false testimony against someone else. Did you spot that? It's a deliberately kind of social thing that's in view. God's command, he doesn't speak of truth in some sort of abstract way, but in the context of concrete relationships between me and you, and between you and the person next to you, between us and those around us. But lying to others, it just seems so tempting, doesn't it? Have you ever thought about why it's so tempting? Now, we have a problem in our garden at home. We have a weed that will not go away. Every time I mow the lawn, I faithfully cut the top off it. Every time I get the lawnmower bit right, they just keep coming back. But you know what I'm doing wrong, yeah? Because unless I dig up the roots, messing around on the surface is not going to make a difference. Draw a line from the weeds in my garden to lies. Do you see the connection? We can slap a bit of makeup on top of things. We can do as much positive thinking as we like. But unless we deal with the roots, nothing is actually going to change. Why is lying so tempting? I think, well, lying makes us some big promises. Here are some I thought of. Lying promises. It promises you results. It promises the result that you want. Lying promises that you can control it. You will not get found out. Lying promises that it's easy. It's certainly easier than telling the truth. Lying promises it will do no harm. And lying promises you, well, it's not that serious. It doesn't matter. Why not? Do you ever think like that? Have you been persuaded that any of those are true? Well, God says, do not lie. Keep thinking of me, because I think that the problems run a bit deeper too. Lying promises us it can keep our pride intact. We don't need to admit we got it wrong. We don't need to admit we made a mistake. Lying promises that we don't need to face the consequences. We can deny all knowledge. It wasn't me, it must have been someone else. Lying promises that we can cover things up. You are free from responsibility. You won't be blamed. You're not a failure. Lying promises convenience. It's a quick way to get your way. It's just efficient. It promises you're not going to be pinned down. Being devious with words means you're never going to be backed into a corner. You don't have to give a specific answer you might need to follow through on. And it promises you, manipulation promises you that it is the best way to get people to do things the way that you want to do them. Lying makes massive promises. All of those things are attractive to me. And yet here's the thing. It's utterly poisonous to you, and it's utterly poisonous to me. And I think that's our starting heading, the poison of lies. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. God's commands are clear. If it helps, if you're a visual thinker, think of it like the banks of a river. The banks of a river are there to keep the thing flowing, to keep the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. It keeps things working well. But take the banks away and what happens? what you're left with is not a beautiful flow of life, but this muddy, stagnant swamp. What does lie do? Lies kind of pump pollution into the wonderful world that God has made. They pump poison into the system and everything starts to suffer. Nothing is left unaffected. Come with me from the countryside to the law courts. Back in the ancient world, witnesses were everything. That's why the language of this verse, I think, is so specific. This was a world without DNA testing, without fingerprint technology, without audio recordings and CCTV. They didn't have any of that, but they did have eyewitnesses. So if someone stood up to accuse someone of doing wrong, on their own, the case wouldn't stand. But if they found another person who would stand up with them and make the same claim, you were in big trouble. Justice, even today, it follows the pattern. It relies on the testimony of several witnesses. And so God makes a big deal about the need for truth in that. Lying in a courtroom puts someone else's life at risk. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. It is very definitely there to ensure a justice system functions as it should. But the command doesn't stop there. It doesn't leave us alone as we walk out of the courtroom. Because you and I might never be called to testify in a court of law. And yet, the witness you give to other people every single day is just as serious. As a lady called Jen Wilkin, who put it brilliantly, she said this. She said, just as the third commandment called us to honour God's name, well, the ninth commandment calls us to honour the name of our neighbour. Just as we must not misuse the name of the Lord, so we must not misuse the name of those created in his image. It's impossible for us to honour our elders, commandment 5, if we speak falsely about them. It builds on the sixth commandment. For many who'd never contemplate murder, assassinate another's characters without a thought. No one else is into adultery without first having lied about the worth of another. And bearing false witness also builds on the command not to steal, because slander is identity theft. You see the poisonous effect? If you don't, have a think about the last time someone lied to you or about you. How did you feel? What about the time that you gossiped about someone else and they found out? How did you feel? How did it work out for you? Lies aren't innocent. They tear relationships apart. They leave us utterly isolated. And God says we must not do it. We've seen the promise of lies. We've seen the poison of lies. The Bible also gives us a glorious contrast, because it shows us the God who never lies. One of the reasons truth-telling is so important is because it reflects who God is. Not just because of the blatant harm it does to others, but it mirrors the very nature of God. Let me read you these words from Hebrews 6. They're on page 1205. If you want to follow along, they'll come up on the screen as well. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his promises very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath. God did this so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope set before us must may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. God never, ever lies. That truth is profoundly precious and profoundly good. It's one of the things that makes God, God, that he never ever lies. He has never made a promise he hasn't kept. He's never said a word that wasn't true. He's never spoken a half-truth or exaggerated. He's never gossiped, slandered, or flattered. God has never tricked you. He has never manipulated you. He's never said one thing while he meant another. In fact, let the final line of that passage sit in. God has made this unchangeable, unshakable promise we can build our lives upon. Though everything else in your life might fail, though everyone else in your life might let you down, you have this connection to safety that God has given you his word. As an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. My friends, there is no climate crisis, no global pandemic, no economic scare. There is no health scare, no relationship loss or personal failure that can change the certainty of God's word. And even when we lie on our deathbeds, we can face eternity with the assurance that our anchor is firm and secure. See how it makes such a practical difference? And if you wanted more evidence, just remember the life of Jesus. We see a truth that went beyond just words. He was the man who practiced what he preached, who only ever spoke what was true. Jesus reminded us truth is not just something he has, but it's part of who he is. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Claims like that freak us out. In a world of your truth and mine, we kind of squirm at anything that's so clear and rigid. And yet Jesus is clear. He's clear on the difference between what is true and what is not. He shows us the beauty of a God who never lies. And so before we get really practical, here's the question for you. Whose disciple do you want to be? All of us have got to choose between two options as our model. And we make a daily decision as to who we're going to follow. Over and over, the Bible shows that Jesus is faithful. He loves the truth and he calls us to follow him. But there is another option. Someone Jesus calls the father of lies. And how often we mirror his example. Here's Jesus' words in John 8. Jesus says to them, "If God were your father, you'd love me. For I've come here from God, but you belong to your father, the devil. And you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies." Do you see how serious lying is? Jesus says when we lie, we are dabbling in Satan's primary language. We stand at the fault line between two different kingdoms. And each of us choose each day. Will we serve the kingdom of Christ who always speaks the truth? Or will we serve the kingdom of evil with its cheating and its lying and its death? Whose disciple do you want to be? Yes, we show who we're following in the very practical decisions we make each day, in the very words we use to one another. So we're going to land with three really quick-fire ways that this might make a difference. Here's the first. Stop speaking. Seriously, all of us need to stop speaking at times. We need to cut out the gossip. Someone said, gossip is when you hear something about someone you don't like. Sorry, gossip is when you hear something you like about someone you don't. Or maybe it's an exaggeration that some of us love to inflate things or catastrophize. But you know that's lying, right? We love to inflate or catastrophize. The world encourages us to do it. It's the same with flattery. Flattery, it's kind of just manipulation masked as praise. If you can't trust yourself to say something accurately, even in the smallest details, if you can't tell a story without you being the hero, if you wouldn't want it written down for all to see, we should stop speaking. We all need to stop speaking. Now, the Bible commands silence as wisdom, but there are also times when we must speak. Now, all of us need to speak up. When our neighbour or our colleague has their name trashed in a meeting or ridiculed in the pub, we need to be those who speak up. If we know something's wrong and we fail to speak, we're as guilty as lying as those who said the words. And if you've ever been on the receiving end, you'll know that the silence of your mates can be worse than the words of your enemies. Dr. Martin Luther King, he put it like this. He said, in the end, we remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. We need to stop speaking. We need to speak up. And finally, we need to speak well. It's not enough just to reject the bad. We need to be those who practice the good. As well as fighting lies, we need to soak ourselves in the truth. A kind word, a kind text, an email, it can make a massive difference to someone's day. Every time that you choose to speak truthful, encouraging words, you speak words of life and hope. You bring God's kingdom to bear on earth, just like it is in heaven. During the Second World War, Corrie ten Boom and her family helped hide over 800 Jews from the Nazis. They really wrestled with this command. Let me close with one story. Here she is. As a lady comes banging on their front door, let me tell you the story. She's gone mad, Catherine sobbed. Your sister's gone mad. The SS came, she said, I don't know what they knew or who told them, but your sister Annalise and I were in the front room and I heard her. Heard what? I asked her. I heard what she told them. They pointed at Annalise and said, is she a Jew? And your sister said, yes. Corrie writes, I felt my knees go weak. Annalise had trusted her. Her papers were perfect. And now look what my sister's rigid honesty had done. And my sister had been taken to the police station, but Annalise, no, she'd been sent to the old theatre where Jews were moved to extermination camps. When I finally heard from my sister a few days later, she was singing hymns and songs. How could she sing when she had betrayed another human being? Her response didn't take long. No ill will happen to Annalise, she said. God will not let her suffer because I obeyed him. 6 days later, the telephone rang and a voice said, Corrie, the theatre was broken into last night. 40 Jews were rescued. One of them was a young woman, and she was insistent that I call you and say Annalise is free. It's over to you for a moment. How might this make a difference in your life?